The views and opinions expressed by hosts and guests on Patriots with Grit do not necessarily reflect those of Patriots with Grit LLC, its founders, and owners.
Get ready for truth bombs and guidance from conservative leaders and entrepreneurs, from God-fearing, freedom-loving, truth-telling, patriotic Americans. Welcome to Patriots with Grit. Now let's jump into today's episode with your host, Darren Ross.
Well, hey, Patriot family, welcome back to another great episode here today. On today's show, Randy, we're talking about what the big draw is to all the hoopla around the data centers.
Why is it that everyone wants to have a data center in their city? You know, Darren, we've talked about, well, it's okay, let's get them in here, let's give them big tax breaks, and, you know, we're going to give up a bunch of money, but we're still going to get, say, 10% of that tax money.
On the back end.
Yeah, so the other thing that we're going to find out, too, is we really want to dig into who's paying for all the infrastructure upgrades? And is it truly hitting the pockets of the people within those districts and their rates are going up? So we're going to find out about that.
I tell you what, our guest today has over 25 years in experience with all the inside knowledge and information with economic development, especially on giving incentives and how to get the people to come to the cities and locations and all these different counties and states. He's going to give you kind of a pull back the curtain and show you what's going on behind the scenes. I think it'll make a lot more sense once we get him on. So let's get Tom Cole on right now. Tom Cole, it's awesome to have you as a guest here today on Patriots with Grit. Randy, you know what? I have known Tom for like 25 plus years. Can you believe that?
Is he really a friend?
He's a friend.
I can't believe you have a friend.
He's a friend that rides a crazy crotch rocket, Randy. Ah. I mean, you know, you and I grew up riding dirt bikes. Yeah. He drives one of those mean machines that are like a death trap.
No kidding.
I wouldn't even. He wears a fancy GoPro on his helmet all the time, right, Tom?
Yeah, the GoPro fits everywhere. But yeah, I tried the Harley thing because I think it was age appropriate, and it was not. It was not. I just kind of felt like I was on a sofa going down the highway, and so I'm stuck with doing it.
You're not a Harley guy.
Not anymore. Nope. Wow.
So the reason we wanted to bring you on, Tom, is you've been in the economic development world, city government, local municipalities, pretty much your whole career, 25 plus years. You and I used to be in the same small group at church, and we heard a lot of your stories about what you were working on, what companies were coming to certain counties or cities or states or whatever. And then you went to work for other cities throughout the Kansas City area. And now you're on your own at thomasandrew.org. You stepped out, kind of hung your own shingle and starting to do your own thing. But we want to have you come on today and talk about economic development at the local level. And primarily, we want to dig into what's going on with all the data centers. So let's kind of get a little bit of background info on you first for our audience to listen to and explain to show that you are legit and credible. And then let's dig into this whole data center topic, because there's a lot of dissension. There's a lot of division. A lot of people love them. A lot of people don't want them anywhere near their city or their town. So let's dig in here and kind of put the frosting on the cake on this topic.
Yeah, very cool. Again, Tom Cole, grew up in Northwest Missouri and kind of felt like a lot of economic development people, you just kind of fall into it. I think now there are actually college programs where you can become an economic developer at the end of the day. But 99% of the folks that I know in the industry and have for the past 30 years all just kind of fell into it by means of promotion or happenstance or nobody else to take the job. I'm actually one of the few that kind of started off that way. Again, I thought, you know, my first go with a small business development center was going to be a 3-credit-hour, you know, internship. And then on the third day, all of a sudden, apparently I don't want to say I wowed them. I think they just found a sucker who was willing to work. On the third day, I ended up with 3 offices in Northwest Missouri, and it became like a full-time job. So in the 3 kind of areas of economic development, primary areas are entrepreneurship, business recruitment, and then business retention. So going to get businesses, keeping them there, and then helping grow the small ones as well, are really kind of, if you look at economic development as a three-stooled or three-legged stool. But, you know, over the years, I've worked with incredibly small businesses from, you know, one-person shops all the way up to, you know, 100 million or maybe even billion-dollar companies with hundreds or thousands of employees, really in all those facets of economic development. I spent a lot of time working on the business recruitment side, which is kind of where we're going with, I think, with this conversation about attracting, whether it be a data center or a manufacturer, an office project or whatever. So that's really where I've spent the majority of my time, is on the business recruitment efforts for a number of communities. Now, I also You know, so that's kind of my background. But I think it's also important to say I spent a better part of a decade as a commercial construction executive. So I've also been on the other side. I've been that schmuck that walks into City Hall with my plans and says, you know, are they going to beat me up over my dream? So I've been on both sides of that planning and zoning counter, if you will, or I've not only been the government, but I've been on that side requesting something from the government. So, you know, that's been probably the most interesting thing in my time inside government is that most folks inside government have not been outside the government.
That's the problem.
I think that it is. And I've kind of always had this reputation of being the anti-government government guy, which means I tend to think like a business person rather than a government person. And, you know, I guess a classic example was as economic developers and planning and zoning people kind of always have this constructive combat. You know, the economic developer wants to see cool stuff happen, and the planning person went to a conference and they came back and said, well, we need a 10-acre park behind them, and we need a 10-foot-wide sidewalk that connects nothing to nothing.
We're kind of like when we built our manufacturing facility in the not-so-great city of Excelsior Springs, Missouri. We built a big 25,000-square-foot facility back in 2002. And I don't remember what the numbers were, but you had to have two or three parking spaces for each employee. And we had this massive asphalt, and just this huge parking lot. We had like 30 employees and down to 20 and down to 16 employees. And it was nothing but asphalt with weeds growing up through it. So I'm like, where is the logic and who has the brains to come up with something so nonsensical as this? Yep. And it made absolutely no sense. And they said, well, you have to plant this many trees and this many shrubs. And, you know, me, I never planted a tree or a shrub because I wasn't going to mow around them. So anything they wanted to do, I was wanting to do it counter. But I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but the people that are enforcing the rules really haven't lived in the real world. And we wonder how they even function because so few of them have good common sense when it comes to entrepreneurship and business ownership.
I tend to agree with a lot of that. And I've always loved my role within governments as being the guy who kind of challenges those government norms, if you will. And I don't think I've ever worked a project with a Burger King, but I always use Burger King as my example in those planning cases of what we need them to add, you know, this and that and a bigger parking lot and a sidewalk that goes nowhere and a bike path. And I'm like, how many more Whoppers do you think they're going to have to sell to cover that cost that's not in their pro forma when they decide to come to Anytown, USA? Mm-hmm. And the planning side never knows the answer to that question because they've never done the math. They don't know the cost of what it is that they want that business to do. They typically don't have a clue. But it looked good at a conference. So now they're trying to bring it back from San Francisco and apply it to Anytown, USA.
Use San Francisco. We'll have feces all over the place.
There we go. Exactly. Have you seen the map?
Oh, my God.
They have a human feces map of San Francisco to where it's kind of tracked where it is in the town. I haven't seen that for a couple of years, but that was a very real thing. This is where homeless people have relieved themselves all over. And the map's pretty much solid brown. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
It's crazy. So in your position now, do municipalities come to you?
No, actually, right now, my role is a little bit different from all that other stuff I just mentioned. Right now, I'm purely a small business consultant. I assist small businesses, whether it's a person with a dream and no business, kind of help escort them through the process of contemplating things that they hadn't thought of within their business entity. Let's say a shop that wants to sell cookies, all they're thinking about is making and selling cookies. They're not aware of business fluctuations and maybe how to buy their ingredients and where to buy their ingredients and how to staff the project and schedule things. So I help in a very simplistic form. I help entrepreneurs kind of set up their business and get going. So their business plan, finance plan, marketing plan, making sure that they're legal in all the ways they need to work with existing businesses. Every business has a problem. Some are just microscopic things that are on the back burner. Some are catastrophic issues. But again, that business owner really, in many cases, not all cases, but in many cases, they know about the cookie. They don't know about dealing with all this businessy crap that came with starting their entity.
Well, it's kind of like Michael Gerber says in the E-Myth. I don't know if you've ever read any of his work, he talks about the business owner and the technician. I mean, business owners are technicians. They want to make the cookie and sell the cookie, but they have no idea how to work on the business. They're just in the business every single day. And shout out to Michael Gerber. If you've never read that book or any of his books,
I have.
E-Myth Revisited or the E-Myth is just, it's an absolute must read for any business owner that's starting up because.
No, I met Gerber, probably 30 years ago.
I did too. Uh-huh. I did too.
Uh-huh. But anyway, help entrepreneurs with all kinds of things like that. And then also work with chambers of commerce or economic development groups that, and if we're honest, all of them, no matter where they are, they all kind of give lip service to we do stuff for small business. But as soon as a big project rolls in, the small business stuff's the first thing that falls off the plate. So I kind of help put some programming together in those areas as well. But as it relates to government, one of the things that's my favorite thing to do is called ombudsman services. And basically all that means is I help them deal with their local government, whether it go through a planning process or make presentations to a city council or request incentives or if they need a stoplight out front, that kind of stuff. Because that oftentimes it's really not necessarily what you know, but kind of who you know or who that targeted person within any government, not a particular government, but within any government. These are the people and these are the functions that can kind of help you along the way and kind of grease the skids a little bit. So I've found that that's probably my most valuable service is helping people wade through, you know, the cumbersome machinations of local government or even state government in some cases, just to kind of help them get to that end point. And I like to say that I typically like to stand in at kind of the intersection of public policy and free enterprise, because both sides don't always understand each other. In fact, they rarely do.
And well, that one side is, I'm finding out, is hampering the ability to do business.
Yep.
You got to climb a mountain just to sell a product. So
Randy's getting his, your taste buds whetted a little bit on business ownership here. We're not going to go into it in the details, but he's learning what the business ownership train is like. But it's before the show today, he's like, I just have never seen so many hoops you have to jump through and how they try to keep everyone suppressed into starting their own business.
And I can't get anybody to help me, give me some guidance on some of this stuff. And it's like, how can I be compliant when nobody will help me be compliant?
Exactly.
So, Tom, I have to ask a question here real quick. Are you working strictly with brick and mortar businesses, or do you work with some businesses that are in local towns or municipalities that may work out of their house or strictly online?
Oh no, absolutely both. Yeah. Probably my smallest client was just somebody who does like some therapy, family therapy, family counseling stuff out of her house, and that's a one person operation.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, let's jump into this data center thing, because there's so many questions, so many myths. But there are some things that we know.
Yep.
I guess before I even say anything else, tell us what the big desire for somebody to bring a data center in. What is it it's so exciting about to an administrator or somebody to bring a data center in?
Or a mayor. You take a mayor of a small town, you know.
Uh-huh.
Independence, Missouri. Liberty, Missouri. What's the draw?
I think you'd actually have to ask city administrator and the mayor that question. I'm going to talk in generality. What's kind of funny is I live in Liberty and frankly know more about what's going on the rest of the metro than here, because most of my clients aren't in my own town.
Right.
but you know, I think the attraction for municipalities is kind of twofold. One being that it kind of gives this symbol that, hey, we are of the modern current technology age and we can accommodate these things. The number of jobs really doesn't matter. I mean, that, you know, whereas, you know, I worked on Harley Davidson's plant when they moved to Kansas City, you know, in 1997 or whenever that was. And we're talking about a big dollar investment at the time. By today's projects, it's not a big project, but it certainly was. And I think they brought in, you know, 700 or 800 employees or something. And that was a big deal. You know, you look at employees and at that time in history, you know, the late '90s, early 2000s, kind of economic developers were really commissioned to go out and get wins, whatever that looked like. And it was almost crazy at the time that we would just go out and shoot things and give things away. And, you know, any win was categorized as a win. But I, you know, over the past 30 years, I think I've recognized that discernment is more and more important. And sometimes I found that the projects you don't get are actually wins. But I think the attraction to data centers is that kind of demonstrating to the world, or this idea that you're demonstrating to the world that you are kind of with it as far as technology goes. It shows that you're a desirable place to be. But on the other side of that equation, money always factors into these things too. And I think a lot of communities are kind of betting on the come. They may abate those taxes for a period of 20 years or something and say, well, 20 years from now, or typically it's like a 10-year 100% abatement, then they get 50% off their taxes for the next 10 years. At the end of 20 years, they're going to be paying a boatload of money in taxes for this thing. And while there probably is truth to that, my question is, and nobody really seems to be asking this question, is what happens with all technology? It gets smaller. So what happens if the power of a data center comes down to the size of a small house or a refrigerator? You know, what happens to these buildings?
So that's where I want to go with this too, because we've had three different technology people on from different, from one from Silicon Valley, one that's into quantum computing. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and then an ex-CIA cyber guy talking about these technologies. And he goes, they're all three of them say it's already outdated.
Well, I got to jump in here.
They're still building it anyway.
I had lunch a week ago today with a guy that I've known since first grade, went to college with him. He was my roommate. And he's been in technology his whole life. And he goes all over the world implementing and deploying Google processes to companies all over the, really all over the world. And he and I were talking about this whole topic. And because we're of the same mindset. And he was explaining how, I think he had seen an interview with the founder of NVIDIA, and he was talking about how this guy was explaining they currently have all these devices, many of them about the size of a cell phone, all hooked and linked together. Pretend like they're in a couple of big racks, you know, a couple of big racks bigger than like a freezer. And he said, today we have more power right here than all of the power of the entire internet. Yep. So my question, Randy, is same as yours. What's going to happen to all these massive infrastructures and these buildings? And the common number, Tom, keeps coming up is in 5 years. Look what technology has done now in the last 3 to 4 years. What's going to happen every five? It's going to get faster, more powerful, and smaller footprints all across the board.
Absolutely. But right now, kind of the reason that they're going where they're going, honestly, has nothing to do about the good of the community. It has to do with available power. And that is, and power and the ability to build a substation, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, even less, if we encountered like a manufacturer that wanted to come to town and they wanted to look at a piece of property that didn't have adequate power, we could talk to local utility companies and somewhere within 6 to 9 months, a new substation could be built and that operation could do whatever the heck they wanted to. But one of the few remaining things from supply chain irritation from COVID is actually the components to build an electrical substation. So where it used to be, you know, from hey, we want to do this thing to the time it's done being built might have been, you know, 8 or 9 months. Now it's a 4-year lead time still, and that number has not changed since COVID. So these none of these data centers or really any business like a manufacturer has 4 years to wait on a piece of property to do what they want to do. I mean, businesses want to operate now. They want to increase their earnings now. They want to expand, hire people now. So they're finding these locations that literally have nothing to do with the quality of the community or available labor force or anything like that, but purely because they're able to substantiate and provide the power for what they're looking for. And there are so many cases like that. And this is kind of in the realm of that, but if you went to Kansas Speedway 10 years ago and you go to Kansas Speedway now, you recognize that there's an Urban Outfitters warehouse where you used to park out in that field at Kansas Speedway. And it's like, this is the oddest place in the world for a warehouse and distribution center because it does not fit the character of that entire development at all.
It seems like a zoning violation.
But it was available and it had power. And that's how it all comes down. So all these things are, again, they're not trying to pick on particular communities. They're not trying to say, oh, this is the best spot for us. This is an available piece of property and it has power and let's go.
All right. So with what you've said, the city wants to bring a data center in because down the road, they're going to give them tax abatements now in the hopes that in 20 years, they're going to get the mother load of taxes.
Right.
Okay, and I could see that in other sustainable type industries, but they're rolling the dice because I think when it comes time for that, they're going to go, hey, we're closing this one down.
Right, and I think that's a very real possibility, again, because, you know, nearly all technology gets smaller. You know, so are these things going to be, you know, buggy whips and whatever in the future? Are they going to be, now, obviously, I think you can probably repurpose them pretty easy. I mean, if we're honest, a data center is essentially a giant server closet. So they could be repurposed, but I really don't know the difference, the specifications that are going into like the construction of a data center versus that of a manufacturing or a warehouse or something.
Data center. I think the walls can be up to 36 inches thick in concrete. especially the ones that are government related and are, I think Google's the same way. I've been on several of those sites.
Yep.
And they're made rocket impenetrable.
Oh, wow.
So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
So the electric is a huge side of it. The other side of it is water. Now, kind of going back to the tax abatement bit real quick, mm-hmm. It is my understanding that the Liberty one has put together what's called a pilot payment or a payment in lieu of taxes. So even though there is this big tax abatement, they've kind of cut a deal to where whoever this tenant is, I don't know, Metro Blocks,
is what it's called, yeah.
Will be paying the taxing jurisdiction some percentage that I think equates to $40 or $50 million over that period of time. So the city is getting something they didn't have before now. So, but you know, it's not something that the city's going to make a ton of money on. If you've looked at your tax bill, you know where the money goes, and that's to the school districts.
I got to jump in here. I got to before the end of the year, the end of 2025, I'm like everybody else. Our real estate taxes went up and up and up. So I just, you know, I had to go in and have a face-to-face with our local county assessor. And he's a good dude. We had a long talk, about 45 minutes, and he and I came to a conclusion on a lot of different things and basically left as, you know, gentlemen would and agreed and we shook hands. But he was explaining to me, because you know as well as I do, Tom, there's another huge data center going up at the Kansas City Airport, Facebook or Meta, on one side of 169, and the other side is Google. And he and I were having this conversation about, basically, it's not good for the community or for the citizens of Clay County, because they bring in so few jobs. They get an abatement, I think, for 20 or 25 years. Yet here we are, as the homeowners and the small business owners, our taxes are going up, our real estate taxes, our personal property taxes are going up, but yet these oligarchs and technology or technocrats or whatever, Mark Zuckerberg and Sergey Brin from Google, all of them, they're multi-billionaires, and here they're getting a tax abatement, and the little guys saddling the burden like they always do. And the assessor really didn't agree with how that's working, because it's like all on our shoulders as small business owners and taxpayers. And so in your opinion, is there a remedy for that, or is it just going to always be that way and just suck it up, buttercup, and move on?
I think over time we will see a change. And kind of shifting gears a little bit, you know, Walmart's in their history, they used to go in and look for tax increment financing or tax abatements or whatever. And then they kind of got bad guide. And now they really rarely ask for that kind of stuff when they go build a new store. They really rarely do. Now, if it's a part of a much bigger development, the developer may pull some of those things together. But Walmart itself very rarely does. And I think that will probably start happening, because it's hard for me to justify, even though this has been my career, it's hard for me to justify, you know, giving a massive tax break to, you know, a business that has more money than God. Yeah. You know, 30 years ago when I started all this stuff, you know, tax incentives and incentives in general were really designed to kind of bridge a gap between what a company really wanted to do and what they could do and what, you know, where their finances came into play. And it was really kind of to bridge that gap. And if we give you a tax break, then you can make the money work on your building, on hiring these people and stuff. It's kind of good for the community. But now, I mean, you know, there are just so many incentives that are utilized by mega corporate, and I'm not anti-business by any stretch of the imagination, but by mega corporations that truly can print their own money, it's like they don't need it, you know? And where I think that might be heading is, I'm aware of a project in, I'll just say Missouri or Kansas, it's not really in the metro, but it is a data center project, and it's north of $10 billion. And the only thing that they have asked for is a sales tax exemption, which states are allowed to give, a sales tax exemption on their building materials. So from day one, they'll be paying the full boat of property taxes on that $10 or $15 billion facility, and they're okay with it. They're not even asking for it. So I think it really just takes a few of those things to kind of fall into place where the rest of them are like, yeah, you know, that's kind of a case in point for all the residents that are upset with this. And so I think it will probably come down, but right now everybody's still pretty darn excited about it. And, you know, economic development kind of comes in waves of what's hot. Data centers are hot right now for a lot of folks. not too long ago, you know, within the past decade, crypto mining facilities were a hot deal.
Yeah.
And I'll come back to that in just a second. And then back in the early 2000s, everything was biotechnology. Biotechnology was like the creme de la creme of we want some sort of biotech project or something that has to do with pharma or medical or whatever. And it, you know, kind of in the middle of all that, the crypto guys, they really, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of the crypto mining facilities were just kind of scams from the get-go. And a lot of utility companies got burnt saying, oh, we'll build the infrastructure for you. We can't wait for you to build. And they never heard from those guys again. So
after they built the infrastructure?
Yes. Yes.
Well, that seems like a bad contract somehow.
Bingo. But then going back to the early 2000s with biotech, I was actually a construction guy at the time, contracting exec. And an economic development group called and said, hey, we've got this biotech company. They're looking at buying this old office building, 500,000 square feet. Can you kind of walk them through it and just give them an idea of what their improvements would cost? Because really, they didn't know at the time. So I walked through with these biotech guys, and there's five of them. Two of them were throwing a football the whole time, and like a literal football. They were playing catch the whole time we're walking through this building. And I'm like, how many people are you going to have? Because this thing's already pretty much set up for, you know, a whole bunch of people to have restrooms and offices and cubicles and whatever else. And I was asking them about their data needs and all kinds of stuff like that. This is probably 2006. And I guess because I was wearing jeans and boots that day and was a construction guy, they just assumed that they'd let the hick in on the joke. And they're like, well, you know, it's really just the five of us. And I'm like, well, why do you need 500,000 square feet of office? And they're like, well, you know, honestly, we're just trying to build this thing up on paper so a big pharma company buys us before they realize that we're not worth anything.
He told you that. Like private equity type stuff?
It was kind of before that became a popular term.
Yeah. Right.
And that really kind of opened my eyes. You know, we can talk about the most virtuous businesses saving society and improving health and all this kind of stuff, but there are always going to be scammers out there. And I think... And I'm unaware of any scammy type things on the data center end yet, but there's bound to be a few mixed in at some point.
Everybody needs to know that the financial world is changing. And here's what we do know. The dollar is failing and silver is in high demand.
And Economics 101 says demand increases price.
And when financial institutions are buying up the silver and gold, that indicates that they know something's going on and they're getting prepared. Are you prepared?
Noble Gold is there to help all of our viewers and listeners in this crazy economic time, especially in the upcoming of the silver market. All you need to do is run over there to noblegoldinvestments.com/grit and get your free wealth protection kit now. So we like to be really transparent here on Patriots with Grit. And one thing we want you to know is Randy and I are not financial advisors, nor do we play them on TV, do we, Randy? So we highly recommend you get with a financial advisor before making any investments in your precious metals.
One thing's for certain, things are changing. Get prepared. You don't want to miss out because this is an extreme opportunity in the silver market. Just go to noblegoldinvestments.com/grit. Don't miss out.
So speaking of this, you've been on both sides of the fence. You've been on the city, county government side. You've been on the private entrepreneur, business owner side. In your opinion, do you think any of this... the administrators, either at the county or the city level, do you think any of them are getting their wheels greased or their pockets lined?
I really don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't think so because while you have a lot of meetings with the prospect, you're never really alone with them. I mean, it'd be dumb for me as a city manager to have a meeting by myself with a big company that's talking about coming to town. It's always going to be me and my planning folks and my public works folks and whatever. And, none of the cities I've worked have had a cohesive enough team that somebody's not going to rat us out if that happens.
So you don't think any of that's really happening in the local area?
I really don't. And you know, I was actually accused of that by a citizen in one of the cities I was in a number of years ago about a grocery store that wanted to move to town. And the guy during public comments pointed at me and saying, he's getting steaks and prostitutes for this. And
oh my gosh.
Like, you know, I'm not, but he also said we're meeting in the basement of the library of that town, and that town didn't have a library, didn't have a basement. So whatever. But so, I mean, that's kind of an easy from the hip kind of, you know, let's attack something or somebody that I really don't think.
Okay.
in smaller suburban towns, I absolutely don't think that's happening. I can't speak for the Chicago dailies of the world and things like that. But
right.
I just don't. I think that would be very obtuse and almost difficult to be in a position to have those conversations.
So you mentioned, and I want to put this on park for a minute. Go back to the schools. I want to go back to the infrastructure. So depending on the type of data center, I know there's several different types of ways that they can produce electricity, or they're low energy or recyclable water, whatever. So in general, I got my notes here. I looked it up. A mid-sized data center can use up to 300 megawatts of electricity. So you mentioned that they pick a spot because there's power. But yet I've heard, and maybe I'm wrong, the ones that were up here north of 435 up around Smithville, there had to be some major infrastructure with the electrical, with everything.
Oh, I'm sure.
So everything I look up says that there's loans, there's bonds, but as far as getting the infrastructure up, it gets passed off to the people in a slow, gradual rate increase, but it's sold as, we need to do that anyway for development purposes. So, you know, we get the burden and it keeps going up. And I had a note here that somebody, and I wish I knew where it was at, their electric bill went up 267%.
Oh, wow.
Well, our farm operation's gone up like 29%. And it's always that same old play. You know, we just need to improve the infrastructure. We just need to bring it up to speed and modernize it.
So,
and how can you help but think that that's not helping subsidize these people who aren't paying taxes?
Well, and then,
I have not followed it, but didn't Josh Hawley recently put together some sort of a proposal that says, you know, the data centers have to pay for their own infrastructure?
I sure hope so. I didn't heard that, but I think the one in Liberty, that's part of the plan. They got to pay for some of this.
Yeah, but the thing that gets me is Evergy's not going to. Evergy no. wants to accept the checks, not cut them.
Right. And, you know, you said the thing about some of these billion-dollar companies probably have more money than the city themselves.
Every one of them.
Exponential.
Yeah. So it's like, help us improve our infrastructure if you want to be here.
Yep.
You know, that's what I wanted to hear from you.
Typically on other kind of developments like that, like large retail developments I've worked on, the developer absolutely has to put the streets through the development and bring the utilities to their property from wherever they are. So yeah, I mean, on most types of development, the developer is required to do that stuff, because it wasn't sitting on the city's agenda of, we're going to go build roads and triple the amplitude of electricity. It wasn't on their list of things to do. So yeah, I mean, the right thing to do is for those end users or that developer to be paying for that on the front end.
So one of the things I've heard, and it may very well be a myth because I'm in the industry with fire protection, it talked about the massive fire suppression systems they have to have. Now, I may be completely wrong, but it talked about the massive fire lines that have to come in and all this stuff. I'm thinking, first of all, they're servers. You don't want to dump water on them.
Right.
It's got to be more of a dry or a halon system of some sort. So that whole myth, I don't buy that.
Right. Nope. You're dead on. You're dead on. Yeah. It certainly would not be a heavy water user in that regard.
So tell us about the schools. All this money seems to go to all the schools. Why can't we back off the schools a little bit?
Schools have become very savvy and very, very involved when it comes to tax abatements. In fact, I think the state of Kansas, I don't believe you can abate the taxes from a school district. I think that might be a Kansas law actually now, that the schools are going to get their money regardless, or at least a pretty decent chunk of it. The Missouri schools typically, again, try to negotiate with developers or whoever the project may be in creating what we call pilot payments, or payments in lieu of taxes. Where yes, your payments, your taxes are abated, but the school district and that entity have put together a side deal to kind of make everybody feel better that they're still getting something. So now I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I do believe that the project here in Liberty, I think it is going to pay somewhere in $40 or $50 million of pilot payments over the next 20 years or so. And I would venture to guess that the vast majority of that is probably going to go to the school district.
Just to that municipality, Liberty Schools, or will it be split up with other schools in the county? probably just the Liberty schools.
I think should just be Liberty schools. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So answer me this. At what point do the schools get so elaborate that we're past beyond the education part and we're into the aesthetics part?
That happened years ago.
I know.
Well, that's actually I'm pro school, by the way, but it's kind of an interesting and timely question, Randy, because I've seen over the past few weeks a couple of very large school districts here in the metro, very large school districts in very affluent areas, are now consolidating schools and getting smaller. And it's like, well, wait a second, what about all these bond issues and extravagant features and massive sports facilities and everything? And so that's kind of caught me off guard just the past couple of weeks, because I mean there's some very prominent, very large school districts that now are talking about, well, maybe we don't need 10 middle schools, we just need 7 or 6. And it's like that'd be a tough pill for me to swallow if I lived in those districts, because I, you know, like Darren said, you know, my property taxes have been going up quite a bit.
Absolutely. So then
we're not talking about school districts that, you know, there are always three in the metro that are at the bottom of the line. We're not talking about those three at all. We're talking about some of the folks that are toward the top, which essentially is an admission that they have overbuilt over the years.
So here's the question.
The key question.
They have extra real estate sitting around. They don't have enough kids to fill it. Obviously, supply and demand kicks in. If they sell those buildings, where does that money go from the sale?
Probably back to the schools. Now I'm not an expert on school finance, but whatever their version of a general fund is, more than likely.
Do we as citizens then get a tax reduction because they don't need all the facilities?
It'll go up again next year.
I guarantee you do not.
yeah, exactly.
So you have
that's been a fascinating news story just over the past couple of weeks of, because I would expect it for some districts that have kind of always struggled a little bit. I would expect that, but certainly not the ones where there's a multitude of growth and this is not even on the Missouri side, by the way. But there's been a multitude of growth. They've gotten a gazillion big economic development projects over the years, and the school district continues to big. And then all of a sudden it's like, we've got too many schools. We need to consolidate a few. And it's like, what in the world?
But think about how much pull public schools have, whether it's from administrators, teachers, a lot of parents. You know, you take all those into the mix, and they're going to think, I want the data center because I want the money coming in here, because we want Johnny to have the best weight room, and I want to have the best smart boards in my classroom, and I want to have as an administrator, I want an extra $30,000 a year so I can be making $280,000 as a superintendent.
Oh, we got to put a fountain out front.
Got to put a fountain out front. Have two or three fields. I mean, the fields have to rival, you know, major college fields now.
So when you had your discussion with the assessor, I think the topic came up that a lot of times the schools will pressure the assessor's office to say, hey, what's the rate going to be? And I can't remember how that was all positioned, but they're really wanting to know before they do their budget because they're relying on all the extra money.
Yep, exactly. Which kind of got a lot of place. Now, somehow I think they got a free pass on it, not just school districts, but a number of taxing jurisdictions. You know, during COVID, a lot of money was given to a lot of different agencies and organizations and whatever. And they started spending the money like crazy. And in a manner where they decided that they were going to spend, you know, whatever this money is they got from the government for COVID, but they assumed that that money was going to be forever. So 2 years later, they're like, well, where's our extra, you know, $10 million? And I'm like, well, no, that was a one-time thing. Well, how can we possibly budget if we don't know what we're going to get? No, you got to look at that as a bonus, as a one-time.
What did you do? What did you do before
that's,
that?
That's the people in education. Exactly. They're the ones teaching your kids. I mean,
the math teachers.
Yeah.
And I think I'm talking about county operation on this case, not particularly a school district, but you know, you've got to look at bonus money as, hey, I just found a nickel. That's pretty cool. Not, I'm going to find a nickel every day for the rest of my life.
Right.
It's nuts. But yeah, I mean, if you look at your tax bill, I mean, the vast majority of it, everybody takes their assessing complaints or their property tax complaints to the county, because that's obviously where the assessor is.
Right.
In most cases, the assessor is charged to follow whatever the state tells them to do. People go to the cities. But if you really look at where your tax bill goes, the city and the county are, and I'm not saying this as a government, as a former government guy, they are minnows in the ocean of your tax bill.
Yeah, he told me, here's the hierarchy, and it was public schools was first, and I forget, libraries or mental health. It was, they're like the big three.
Oh, and the fire department, police department. Yeah.
But absolutely.
And then, like you said, the counties and the cities kind of got the crumbs. But Tom, here's another question I want to know. Are all these economic development wins, in your opinion, are they really wins?
It depends. It kind of depends on the community too. I mean, if you're, you can relate to this, Derek. If you're Orrick, Missouri, and
Randy, that's Randy. That's Randy's stomping grounds.
There you go. So if you're Orrick, Missouri, and no bones against Orrick, but if all of a sudden you're kind of realizing, you know, we don't have a whole lot of residents around in here anymore and some infrastructure is dilapidating and whatever, it'd sure be nice if we had like 300 more bodies, you know, and folks to pay taxes and maybe some sort of industry, then, you know, Orrick has every right in the world to go out and abate some taxes and get some more people in there and build new homes and whatever they want or need. But again, you know, I've really become very attuned to discernment over the years of it. It's not just that we're a city is getting a new business. It's what else are we getting? And, you know, 20, 30 years ago, we would go, like I said, we would go out and abate taxes on anything. And that was kind of came from the mayors of some of these places that I've spent time in. Go out and get everything. And it doesn't really matter what we give for them. With the notion that, you know, well, if they have 300 jobs, all those people are going to buy gas and eat out for lunch every day. No, they don't. They buy gas near where they live, and very few people actually leave their building to go eat lunch every day. But those are kind of the stories that were told way back when is that, yeah, we're giving away taxes, but they're going to make all these little businesses around it, you know, do so much better because they're all going to be buying stuff, you know, on their off hours. And, you know, I can drive by a lot of my big projects from yesteryear and see the same crappy gas station hasn't evolved at all.
Yeah.
You know, well, they did nothing for them.
Yeah. And to think about this too, okay, so I'm going to make the comment about Orrick. And apparently that's kind of a hot topic. I've been kind of on the peripheral hearing about it. I guess they're putting the best facility, a battery storage facility. Evergy's putting one south of town, probably less than a quarter mile from town, and everybody's worried about, you know, the big fires that can happen in there and all that. So
is that out by Floyd?
Yeah, Floyd. So I don't know.
There's actually one of those planned less than a mile from my house right now.
No kidding, right there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, off Birmingham Road here in actually near where you used to live, Darren, I think.
That's where the data centers are. I mean, that's where right out there off of Birmingham. I mean, everything's Amazon facilities are out there now. It's crazy. But Tom, also I know that you see a lot of these things on Facebook and social media, but how can citizens really get involved in voicing their concerns when these things are coming to their town and their community?
That's a great question. And I'm going to put it on a couple of different shoulders. One is a lot more information is typically out there than people believe. And I just gave a presentation on this to a big chamber of commerce a few weeks ago. But believe it or not, over the past 10 years, the manner in which we consume and interpret messages and communicate has dramatically changed. Currently, the typical American's attention span is 8.25 seconds. And this is going to turn into something here in a second. So 8.25 seconds, to put that in scale, a goldfish that lives in a ball and in a bowl and literally has zero distractions has an attention span of 9 seconds. So we are now, as human beings, thanks to our phones, which are partly the reason for data centers, by the way, we interpret data and information in a different way. We read headlines and bullet points and rarely spend the time to actually get into the true messaging of what's going on. And so a lot of the information that folks say they're not getting is oftentimes out there. It's just that we're no longer trained to read a book. We're trained to read, you know, two sentences and make a judgment on it. But the best way that citizens can really get involved, and particularly for developments in Missouri, there are different classifications of cities, and they're not demeaning, but they have demeaning names: first class, second class, third class, fourth class. Fourth class is not any worse off than anybody else. There's classification names, but at least for a number maybe even every city, you have to do a public notice of a project that is occurring. But unfortunately, that public notice, you know, obviously they put on their agendas, on their websites, on their front doors, and newspaper, whatever, that a meeting is coming up and this is what they're going to talk about. But as far as like actually engaging the neighbors, so to speak. They only have to formally notify by mail the folks that are within 185 feet of that project. So, you know, most of the time, that's not a whole lot of folks you're contacting.
A small fraction of the community.
Exactly. So the folks that are within 185 feet of that project, they get a letter. Some of them will open it. Some will think it's junk mail, not open it, whatever. But really, citizens have to kind of stay on top of this and kind of pay attention to what's going on in their governments. And now with Nextdoor and things like that, it's easier for one person to find it and disperse it to a bunch of others. But, you know, really to kind of pay attention to what's going through your planning and zoning departments of whatever city you happen to be in, because that's where everything typically starts, particularly on something to the scale of a data center. Whatever property they're looking at probably isn't zoned for something like that right now. Probably for the current owner's benefit, it's probably zoned ag. So there has to go through a rezoning process. So it typically pops up first on the planning and zoning agenda, and then ultimately moves on to the city council or board of aldermen or whatever. But really kind of staying organized and showing up at those meetings is very important. And as much as I love elected officials, particularly local government ones, because they're more times than not, they're not the ones that want to be on TV at some point. They just kind of like doing something good for their community, or I like to think they do anyway. But oftentimes, I've seen this a lot. They're going to vote however the last, and this isn't demeaning, I've just seen it. They often vote in accordance with whoever talked to them last. And because it's hard to tell somebody out in the hall, hey, I'm gonna support you, and then get up there and change their mind while they're still out there in the audience. It's difficult to have the cojones to turn your back on somebody you just kind of made a deal with, if you will, or at least signify that you're on their side. Really kind of following the things that are going on in your community is really the best way, because nobody's ever going to put it up on a billboard. Now, sometimes angry citizens put it up on billboards. But the folks who are actually putting the deal together are never going to do that. And again, there are things like non-disclosure agreements, and I understand the purpose for that. But there does come a time in the process to where that's got to get wiped away. And unfortunately, that's typically pretty close to the darn finish line. And the reason for non-disclosure agreements, a lot of people don't understand. And we'll say, you've got a big manufacturer that's going to move from somewhere in the metro to another part in the metro. They want the non-disclosure agreement so they don't get all their employees and investors and whatnot worked up about, am I going to have to move, and answering a million questions and things like that. And if a deal falls through, then they've gone through a lot of headaches for nothing. So that's kind of the point of most non-disclosure agreements. But as soon as it starts going through a city process, you know, all that stuff kind of has to go out the window. And I know there's somebody in the metro, I don't even remember where they're voting on stuff, but they don't know who their tenant's going to be. And that's just kind of dicey for me. You know, how do you really know what you're getting and what they're going to be doing? And I don't know.
Could be a strip club, a abortion clinic, and a dispensary. I mean, you never know.
Those are kind of the dramatic examples, but all the paperwork would suggest what they do without saying who they are.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it could be.
Sure. Like on Harley's project, again, in the late 90s, special legislation was written to kind of assist them at the state level. And it didn't say Harley Davidson, but it pretty much said if an American motorcycle manufacturing corporation would locate here, they would get something like this. So it was really just written for one company. But typically within the applications and the language that's out there, you can kind of figure out what they do, but maybe not who they are. But again, I think a lot of this stuff over time is going to kind of, well, I mean, the project I mentioned that's over $10 billion and no incentives, that's absolutely a game changer for that community.
Right.
I mean, you may not like it, you may have whatever, but and the data center is what it is. But it will unequivocally change the quality of life in that community from paying the full boat of taxes from day one, which I think is, I did the math earlier, and it's some ridiculous, you know, number of millions of dollars that the taxing jurisdictions get to split on an annual basis. I mean, it will turn a place that, not to be demeaning, but a place that's kind of just a puddle in the road into a real place. It's that kind of money.
So what we haven't talked about is, and it depends on the size of the project, obviously, but you know that some of these projects have upwards of 10,000 people on these jobs, can be, but let's say it's 5,000. These people, a lot of them are travelers. They come in, they're going to rent apartments. So now
eat there, shop there.
You eat there, shop there. But the issue is then they have housing problems. We don't have enough hotels. So they build hotels. And I saw this up in Iowa. They built a bunch of hotels and accommodations. And when the minute that job was over, everything's vacant.
Wow.
Right. Right. Yep. So I think the Panasonic plant out in DeSoto may fit that qualification or that line. I'm just not sure about data centers because I think they're just big boxes with utilities and they move in their equipment and that's kind of it. I don't know.
Well, I've been on several of them and because we insure contractors that build them. I mean, some of these can be 5 years. I know up in Altoona, Iowa.
Yep.
There's a massive campus of those. I think there's 12 of them out there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's all along the interstate. And I don't know how long they were going to be out there. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, that was 3 years ago when I was out there and I went by here a while back just driving by and there's several of them, but I don't think there's 12.
Wow.
So, that area might be like all of a sudden just sucked out when everybody's done.
Yep. So, Tom, let's talk about if people want to work with you or they're thinking about moving to a small facility to a community and they want to have you help them out or, consult with them.
If anybody's contemplating a business or anybody has a business that maybe hit some kind of foggy points or if they need somebody to go negotiate with their local government on their behalf, I'd be happy to do that. But, they can check me out at thomas-andrew.org. I kind of have a personal philosophy that your business shouldn't be stressful. Let's view it as a puzzle that we get to assemble together. Now, I'm not going to take over your business. I'm going to try to give some direction, but I'm not going to take over the business. And a lot of folks initially think, well, are you going to become my boss? And it's like, no, not at all. We're going to solve problems together. And
you become my brain.
What's that?
I said you become my brain because I'm trying to sell stuff and I don't have the brains to do it.
So people go to your website. There's a lot of resources. I see a couple here on ebooks that you can download, Small Business Startup Guide and also Entrepreneurial Emotions. Both of those are in electronic format that people can get.
Yep.
And then there's a lot of other options here on your website as well.
Yep. But I really am, I think, one of the few guys or folks that are around that kind of understand the inner workings of government and that private sector business side too. And I think being having dual fluency in government speak and business speak, I think that really goes a long way. And kind of my goal in those meetings, working on behalf of entrepreneurs with the government, is to kind of get everybody to kind of understand where the other one's from. Because oftentimes a local government will say, you know what, that requirement really doesn't make sense now that we understand what you guys are doing and how you operate. And the same goes on the business side too. There are some government regulations that may seem obtuse, but when you kind of really understand the history of why it's there, it kind of makes a little bit of sense. Not always, but it kind of makes a little bit of sense. So it's kind of just getting everybody to be able to agree to allow a project to move forward or to go forward or to solve a business problem of some degree. I absolutely love it. I just love working with people and kind of helping kind of foster their idea into something real and to take, a burden off of their shoulders. It's kind of keeping them up at night if they've got an ongoing business issue. Landlords love me because I get calls from landlords because they often recognize that their tenant doesn't have as many cars in the parking lot as it used to, or maybe their staff's gotten smaller. And sometimes a landlord may even pay me to go in and help that business out because it's going to be cheaper than having an empty building and the marketing costs and everything of not getting rent from that deal. So sometimes it works out that way, but because landlords, they can drive by and say, wow, this place is kind of sucking wind right now. And it was doing pretty well. They need some help.
I've seen a lot of strip like retail locations. Yep. It's almost like build it and they will come and they never come.
Exactly.
So let's rewind back to my scenario, Tom, when we built our manufacturing facility early 2000s, when they, 25,000 square feet, we built a very nice building. I think you were there at our facility back in the day.
I've been there.
And it was brand new. I mean, state of the art. In fact, the city would use our building as a draw when other companies wanted to come to Excelsior Springs. They would want to it was the pasta company and our company and maybe one other one because it was such an awesome facility. But had we known about you then and the services you provide, if we were to have engaged with you at that point, could you have negotiated with like the local city officials and say, hey, these people don't need three or four parking spots per employee? I mean, are you able to push through and get across to those local officials?
At the time you did that, probably not. They probably would have said, you know, these are the rules and these are kind of the planning standards right. across the country and whatnot. But now it's actually going the opposite direction. And I think governments are getting a little more flexible in some of that stuff. In fact, I believe Kansas City, Missouri, of all places, recently took away their parking requirements. So in theory, you can build a high rise with zero parking and they're good with
it right now. So let's talk real quick about, do you do just commercial or residential? Like I know, like in our county, Clay County, and then obviously we're familiar with City of Liberty. A lot of times the cities will adopt the planning and zoning of the counties. And some of the planning and zoning requirements are just goofy as all get out. Are people able to have you help them out on the residential side? Or are you strictly for businesses and commercial?
It kind of depends what it would be, but I mean, if it's a conflict with government or an impasse with government, yeah, I can absolutely help.
Okay,
absolutely help. And I mean, on the residential side, I was a residential developer for a number of years, built affordable housing throughout the Midwest for a number of years as the developer, the builder, and the operator. I've done all that stuff for one of my businesses as well.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, Tom, we'd like to give you the last word. What was one piece of advice that you can give our viewers and listeners today?
Stay informed, pay attention to what your local government's agendas look like. And around here, I think folks do generally a pretty good job of that. But yeah, I mean, that way there are no surprises. And always encourage folks to use discernment. If it's too good to be true, more times than not, it is. And, you know, years back, I don't remember, this was probably around 2010 or so. I think it was the city of Odessa. They had this big outfit come in from Salt Lake City, I think Utah somewhere. And they'd promised to do three, and it was it was almost hard to believe from the get-go, but people believed it. It was going to make some sort of food pills like the Jetsons took. Through nourishment, it would just come through a couple of pills each day. I think it was going to be some sort of a diaper manufacturer baby formula. Oh, and by the way, they created a perpetual motion machine so you can have a generator that never stops and you don't have to put fuel in it. So all this like pie in the sky stuff, and legislators from Jeff City came up and they rolled out the red carpet and massive tax incentive package. And then they kind of found out, you know, a few months down the road that, yeah, this business wasn't worth the paper that their letterhead was on. And so it's discernment. If something seems too good to be true, ask questions. And that's like a life lesson for any situation in life. Ask questions. Why, you know, not to be skeptical as to why somebody wants to come to your community, because hopefully you have a great community. But you know, what is the attraction to this? And in the data center's case, it's 100% because of the power. But you know, anytime somebody rolls out something that's just too good to be true, or, you know, I've seen it all. I call those rainbow projects, rainbow or unicorn projects. And I stay the heck away from them because I, you know, if they happen, that's great, but I'll probably be grateful that I didn't have anything to do with it.
Perfect. So. Well, man, it's been great having you on here today and
appreciate
shedding light on this topic. I think our viewers will appreciate your insight and your knowledge on this, but Again, people can go to thomas-andrew.org if you want to have Tom help you out with your business or your marketing or just to work with your local officials. So Thomas, thanks so much for being on here. Appreciate it. Keep riding that crotch rocket, my friend. Hope to have you back on in the future. All right. We'll see
you. Thanks so much.
Take care.
There's three types of gases in the body: oxygen, carbon dioxide, and nitric oxide. Cardio Miracle is your advanced formula nitric oxide booster and provides you essential support for increased vitamin D3 and blood flow and oxygen, cellular health and reproduction, improved cardiovascular health, enhanced energy and clarity, and it supercharges your sexual stamina. So start reclaiming your health today and increase your energy, stamina, and focus. Go to cardiomiracle.com, enter discount code GRIT. That's cardiomiracle.com, discount code GRIT. Take advantage of this awesome product and start feeling better today. CardioMiracle.com, discount code GRIT.